You're tuned to the 8 o'clock buzz on WORT. This is Brian Standing. According to information provided by local governments to Our World in Data, 890 million COVID-19 vaccines have been administered worldwide. That means roughly 12% of the world population has been vaccinated. How those vaccinations have been distributed, however, is a different story. Wealthy nations in North America and Europe have had very high vaccination rates, while nations in the global south, in Africa, South America, and Southeast Asia, have fared poorly. Some countries have yet to administer a single dose. All of the vaccines produced so far have been produced under patent, which limits who can produce them. Dalin Jebo Shabalala is an associate professor of law at Dayton University and a board member of the Center for International Environmental Law. He joins us now by phone. Welcome to the 8 o'clock buzz.
Thanks, Brian. Great to be here.
So are all the global vaccines against COVID-19 produced under corporate patents?
Well, it's interesting because yes, in the sense that that bit that was about commercialization, going from sort of identifying what the product is to doing clinical testing, yes, that was done under patent. But a lot of these were publicly funded. So AstraZeneca, which was the Oxford vaccine, that was almost entirely public money, right? Even the basic building blocks of the mRNA vaccine was NIH-funded money. And so to some extent, when we think about what patents are for, giving people an incentive to invest in R&D, it's a slightly more complicated story here because a lot of the work was done by public money. And so there's a real argument here that public money means public needs should be met first, which means public ownership. And we didn't get
now,
that here.
Now, you mentioned the AstraZeneca vaccine, and that had a great advantage of being cheaper to produce than many of the other vaccines. Unfortunately, a lot of countries have halted that out of health concerns. How drastically has that affected the global supply of vaccines?
So I can speak to the experience of South Africa, where I'm from. I was born in South Africa, brought up in Botswana and Swaziland, and my parents and family are still there. And there's been very little vaccination there, in part because the very first order of AstraZeneca that came in, both was a problem because it wasn't quite matched to the South African variant. So problem number one. And then problem number two, just right supply constraints, right? There probably weren't even enough in that AstraZeneca to really vaccinate all the necessary population. But South Africa stopped using it and sort of farmed it out to the African Union and a few other countries precisely because of concerns about that. And then went to the Johnson & Johnson one. Now there are delays on that. And so that's been compounded by sort of just capacity and also concerns around sort of what to get in safety and relying on Europe and North America to do a lot of the safety assessment has been a problem. And so the risk assessment, I think, has been driven maybe by the concerns of developed countries rather than the concerns of developing countries in many ways.
And so when we talk about these international patents on production of vaccines, as you mentioned, a lot of them were publicly funded, which sort of calls kind of the question of should they be patented at all into question. But who's the governing body for these patents, and how long do they last before before generics can start to be produced?
It's interesting. So the governing bodies are always governments, right? It's just that we've all agreed to sort of applying certain rules and standards at the World Trade Organization. Signed a big treaty in 1994, signed the agreement on IP-related trade issues. And so that's where the rules are set, right? The things that we have to comply with. And if we don't comply with them, the U.S. can sue, or China can sue, or Switzerland can sue other countries. But it's really the countries themselves where the actual governance is. And so, a recent article I wrote really focuses on this idea that no, if a country really wants to issue a compulsory license, essentially say, listen, we need your patent. We'll pay you for it. You can't say no, but we'll pay you for it. Every single country can do that right now, today.
So let's talk a little bit more about that. I mean, you mentioned South Africa, and South Africa and India recently petitioned the World Trade Organization to waive these intellectual property rights regulations for vaccines until the pandemic is over. That was rejected. Now, you have suggested that countries individually can impose what's called a compulsory license. What is a compulsory license?
Well, compulsory license is one of those basic safety valves you build into the patent system, right? We say we'll give you an incentive. You'll get maybe 20 years of life on the patent. But if there's an emergency or there's an antitrust issue or there's something else, we will take away your right to refuse to license and say, no, you have to license it to this person or to this person in order to meet the government need or to deal with the antitrust issues. It's part of the bargain, right? Every company that gets a patent knows that this is part of the bargain. And so pharmaceutical companies know that, right? They saw this with HIV, they saw this with everything else. But that's not really the problem we have here, right? Yes, they're going to argue against it. But the big problem is that rules mean that India can issue one for India, but they can't issue one to export to Botswana or to Swaziland. And that's where the international rules are a problem. And that's what the waiver at the WTO is really trying to address, that cross-border trade in goods where India can produce to service other countries. Argentina can do that to service other countries. And that's really the problem, I think we're dealing with.
So under the current system, there are production facilities, let's say, in India that are producing the Pfizer or the Moderna vaccine under a license, but they're prohibited from exporting it outside of the country. Is that correct?
Exactly, right. And it's all about control and markets, right? Every pharmaceutical company wants to control its market. They don't want to send it to someplace elsewhere. It might be sold cheaper and then sort of leak back into their main market in North America. Right. But in this circumstance, when we need to get them to everybody, that control of the market isn't acceptable anymore, right? You can get your money, we'll pay you for it, but you can't get to control the market in that way anymore, I think is really the basic.
So what is preventing countries from going the compulsory licensing route right now? Why couldn't South Africa or India or Botswana or some of the countries in other countries in Africa that are currently have no vaccines at all? What is preventing them from compelling the pharmaceuticals to give them a license?
So there's a long answer and a short answer. Let me give the short answer first, right? So the short answer is, one, there's a rule of the WTO that just says you can't issue a compulsory license for export, right? So that's what the waiver is definitely trying to deal with. And then there are a couple of complications, which is the companies in India don't want to piss off the pharmaceutical companies. Right? They want to get the voluntary license so that they can get part of the deal. So one of the issues there is there demand for the company in India or the Philippines or Argentina to really get in the way of that? And I think the final thing is just that, you know, compulsory licensing is hard to do. Pharma is a very, very big lobby. It's hard to say we're going to issue a compulsory license when you have a big giant pharmaceutical company yelling at you and can get the Department of Commerce in the U.S. to yell at you too.
I mean, it seems to me that there's a little bit of negotiating. I've got some echo here. A little bit of leverage in that given that there's so much public dollars put into this, I mean, that some governments would be within their rights to say, you know what, we're just going to nationalize it and you don't get a dime. And if that's the threat to the companies, I mean, it seems like compulsory licensing would be, at least they'd get paid. And it seems like it would be a better deal for them. Are there discussions along those lines circulating through the global community yet?
So that's the great thing about compulsory licensing. It actually works best when it doesn't actually get used, right? If it gets held as sort of the stick, right? The carrot is you'll get paid. The stick is we'll issue a compulsory license, maybe even at 0% royalties or money, just as you said. And so there is that bargaining power. I think the problem is the refusal by countries like the US, by the EU, to use that bargaining power on behalf of helping other countries, right? I think that's one of the big issues. And so we're putting a lot of pressure in the international environment on Biden and in Congress in the EU at the WTO to do that. And there are discussions at the WTO under the new director, right, director general, to encourage more voluntary licensing, right, and using the possibility of this agreement, the waiver or other things, to push the companies, I think, to get there. So I think there's a strategic choice that's being made there. And we are seeing some movements. But I will say I'm not happy because I think for the most part, those agreements are still about getting the drugs to fulfill the contracts for developed countries. I don't see those voluntary agreements doing a great job of getting them to developing countries. Or using the existing international facilities like the COVAX facility, which is buying up drugs for developing countries, to do a better job of that.
And so you mentioned that there's political pressure and that on, say, the Biden administration or other countries. So is that, if ordinary citizens are interested in trying to get these vaccines more fairly distributed globally, and obviously that's in everyone's self-interest because the more people who are vaccinated globally, the quicker we can end the pandemic. Is that the appropriate point of contact? Should people be contacting their representatives, say, in Congress here in the United States or the Biden administration and urging them? Is that where that political pressure would come from?
No, that's the great thing. The pressure here really can come from members of Congress because there are members of Congress exactly pushing for this, right? Pramila Jayapal from Washington State. Others are working hard on this. They're on board. We even have members of the administration on board, but we got to push for this. Now, of course, pharma has its own lobbying power. But generally on these issues, they don't hear from citizens. So the more they hear from citizens on this, I think the better it is and the more likely it is that at a minimum, they'll create some space for the Biden administration to take action. At a minimum, to stop hoarding the drugs we already have and send those out.
Now, if there was clear direction from the participating governments or the World Trade Organization, how quickly could manufacturers get vaccines to the places that need them most?
So I think we're not saying this is a magic pill, right? There are other constraints, right? There are inputs, ingredients, delivery mechanisms, all of those, right? And one part of the problem is countries have export limitations on those. The U.S. has its own export limitations. It won't export some things to India, right? So that will still be in place. But there remains capacity in other countries to start production relatively soon once the companies share the data. Right now, we're on track for maybe some countries not to even begin vaccinating some of their citizens late 2022, early 2023, some maybe 2024, and that's unacceptable. But we can maybe get started in 2022 in many places if we can ramp up production and sharing of knowledge at right now between, before we have to wait for another 3 years to get Swaziland, vaccinated.
And how do you see that moving? I mean, do you see that there's enough political pressure there to sort of get that kind of production ramped up, or are we still sort of in the weeds discussing who gets paid and when?
My optimist says, I think we can move fairly quickly because the demand is so high and there's enough money sloshing around to pay for it, that I think there's going to be enough market incentive for companies to get on board, especially those companies that don't have pre-existing relationships with the big pharma companies. My pessimist says there are so many other obstacles beyond just sort of the mechanics and the technical issues, distribution capacity. Simply the cold chain stuff for Pfizer and Moderna is so difficult to manage that I think there are going to be capacity issues. So I'm holding my fingers, crossing my fingers for J&J and for AstraZeneca to really be the ones that meet the supply in most developing countries. And they are the easiest to manufacture. And those are the ones I see being most successful if we can get over this little hurdle of taking care of this concern about safety.
Now, we've been talking primarily about the major pharmaceutical companies' products, but Russia has their vaccine, the Sputnik. China has been working on theirs. Are there prospects for those to be distributed globally as well?
So I'm not the one to knock other developing countries doing things. One of the issues we have with Russia is the transparency issue. we don't really have good data on it in terms of clinical trials, etc. And so the effectiveness rate, we're not sure, right? Now, don't get me wrong, 60% is still better than nothing, but that's still lower than I think we would like, but we have that out there. Sinopharm, the Chinese one, I think is probably more reliable, and we're seeing China doing a good job of sort of distributing it to Africa, developing countries in Africa. But I think there remain a few questions about its effectiveness, again, a transparency issue that we don't have with the others. Again, better than nothing, but the worry is over-reliance on that can be a problem. And right now, those companies have the same exact issue, right? They're voluntarily providing them. But if somebody tries to put a compulsory license on the Sinopharm vaccine, China will scream just as loud as anybody else, right? And so I think that's the thing we have to remember, that compulsory licenses aren't just about developed countries, they're about developing countries and the Russia and the China firms who all have an interest in maintaining their patents as well. And the sort of proposal we have on the table will affect all those companies and make everybody play their part, not just North America and Europe, but also China and Russia.
All right. We've been speaking with Dallin Jubbo Shabalala of the Center for International Environmental Law. Thank you so much for joining us on the 8 o'clock Buzz.
A real pleasure, Brian. Look forward to hearing more of the show. Always fun to listen.
All right. Thank you very much. Thanks.